In Western societies where the most basic notions of right and wrong are not only denied but actively suppressed, recovering a biblical and distinctly Christian understanding of the natural law is absolutely essential.
Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Traditionally, Christians have understood that man is not born a blank slate just waiting to be programmed like a machine. We are moral creatures whose imaginations are darkened by sin. Yet every person still has a basic understanding of right and wrong because God has revealed it to us in his creation through natural law. Denying the vital role of natural law has grave consequences, not only for society, but for the church's crucial task of proclaiming the gospel.
You can meet and hear Aaron Wolf making the case for natural law Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We were all there on Easter Sunday. That's usually when the whole family, even if the whole family doesn't usually show up, they show up. They occupy the pew. There is maybe a face or two that you don't recognize. A lot of faces that, well, you recognize them, but you haven't seen them in a while. In the worst possible case, this is the opportunity for the pastor to take what should be the proclamation of Christ's resurrection, a good solid sermon on law and gospel, and turn it into a sermon on why you haven't been here over the last 6 months or longer. But in the best possible scenario, seeing those new or slightly unfamiliar faces on Easter Sunday morning, is there something that we can tell these people who have shown up, may just be visiting actually, that can assure them that they are welcome back the next Sunday and every Sunday thereafter? Joining us to talk about returning to church after Easter Sunday, Cheryl Magnus, a writer, musician, and homeschool mom in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Five Reasons You Should Go Back to Church Again If You Visited This Easter. Cheryl, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Pastor. Thanks for having me back.
I think everybody who is a frequent church attender knows and sees this, that on Easter Sunday morning in one of the services, there's always going to be those people who seldom, if ever, go to church. And they're not just there by themselves. They're there with mom and grandma, and all the kids are all lined up. Why do you think that that is the case? People who seldom, if ever, go to church are there on Easter Sunday.
Well, I think you would probably get a lot of different reasons if you had the opportunity to go and talk to all those people and ask them. Some of them are there possibly because they just got dragged there by mom or grandma or a friend. Some might just be there because it's tradition. You go to church on Easter just like you go out and you buy new clothes and you go to the Easter egg hunt. It's just part of the Easter tradition that they've become accustomed to. Perhaps some of them are there because they've gone through, you know, a difficult life circumstance recently. But I think actually they might be surprised to hear that they're really all there because God wanted them there. Whether they heard his call or not, that's why they're in church. God called them and they came.
So that doesn't happen, well, by accident or simply because, well, I guess we got to go to church. There, God is doing something in drawing people back to the body of Christ and to the word and sacraments on Easter Sunday.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
For those people who visited, so to speak, on Easter Sunday, you say that there are reasons to come back, and you say the first one is that Easter isn't the whole story.
Exactly. I think many people that come to church on Easter, they're coming on Easter because perhaps they've been in church before and they know that this is the pinnacle of our Christian faith. If we did not have a resurrected Jesus, we would not have Christianity. And so they know that that's perhaps the most important day to go of the church year, but they're missing out on the rest of the story by not coming all through the year. Coming to church on Easter is kind of like showing up for the happy ending to the movie or coming to the wedding of maybe people that you don't know. It's going to be great and wonderful, but you're really not going to fully appreciate it if you haven't been there all year long to hear the whole story from beginning to end. And that's what we get in the church year and in the readings when we're there day in and day out.
What is, in a nutshell, what's the rest of the story that without which Easter doesn't, quite frankly, make a lot of sense?
Right. Well, I think the rest of the story is that the resurrection is the fulfillment of a promise. It was the promise that God made in Genesis after the sin of Adam and Eve that he would bruise Satan's head and Satan would bruise his heel. So that's the beginning of the story, and the resurrection is the fulfillment of that promise.
You say that part of a reason to come back is to realize what the church is for there. And you say it is where God nurtures faith. What do you mean by that?
Yes, well, I think we've all heard people who say that I don't need to go to church. I can just go out into nature, or I can even just hang out with my Christian friends, and we can talk about God, and maybe we can even read the Bible and pray together, and we can get God in that way. And certainly, God is in those places. He can be in those places working, but church is where he has really promised that he will be there for us and that we can find him in the Word and in the sacraments. So if we're not in church on a weekly basis, we're simply denying ourselves that ongoing nourishment. I know that as soon as I leave church, you know, I'm immediately beset by the world and the devil and my sinful nature. And if I could have my way, I would just stay in church all the time. Unfortunately, we can't do that. So the second best thing is just to go back as often as we possibly can.
You say you also need a pastor. Everybody needs a pastor. And that's probably the least easy to understand part of these reasons, the need for a Christian pastor.
Yes, that's exactly right. When I was writing the article, I was struggling a little bit because I'm a Lutheran, and so I look at all of these things through that Lutheran lens, but I was writing this article for a broader group of readers that read the Federalist, and so I had to sort of keep that in mind. So I didn't use the words the Office of the Keys because my readers might not, most of them, understand that, but that's kind of what this point is getting at. We need a pastor because the pastor is God's appointed shepherd on earth. He's the one that has been given the authority to forgive our sins and to give us Jesus in word and sacrament. And when we're in church regularly, the pastor is able to get to know us better. And, you know, sometimes we need law, sometimes we need gospel. And our pastors, when they know us on an individual basis, they are better able to know what we need to hear at any given moment on any given day. They're also there ready at the drop of a hat to come to us when we're in need. And most of the pastors I know, if I would say all the pastors I know, if a phone call comes into the church office and somebody needs help, they're going to drop what they're doing and go and try to help that person. But they're much better able to help if they know that person because that person has been in church all year long.
Do we also need the other people who are sitting there in church on Sunday morning?
For sure. We need our church family. And as I was writing the article, I tied this back a little bit to the Benedict option, which we've been hearing a lot about lately. As Christians, we're increasingly faced with this hostile culture, this world that doesn't understand us. But our church family, unlike the world, does understand us. And they don't necessarily understand us in a worldly way. You know, they may not know what makes Cheryl Magnus tick or what makes Pastor Wilkin tick, but they understand us in the way that matters, which is that we are not ultimately grounded. Our life is not ultimately grounded in this world. I had somebody sort of take issue with the word family as they were reading this article, and they said, well, you can't choose your family like you can choose your church. And sometimes the church is a really messed up place, a very dysfunctional, toxic place. And those things are true. But when I used the word family, I wasn't using it necessarily just specifically about a parish, but just to make the point that as Christians, we are connected in a family way to other Christians, and that we all trace our identity back to Christ. And we need each other, speaking to each other, as well as the pastor speaking to us what Christ has spoken to us.
What do you mean when you say that the church needs you, speaking to that person who was visiting on Easter Sunday?
Sure. This is another place where I didn't use the Lutheran word in the article, but I think what I'm getting at here is the doctrine of vocation. The Christian faith is not just about our relationship with God in the vertical beam of the cross, but it's about our relationship with others, and that is represented by the horizontal beam. So we are called to be good neighbors and to serve our neighbors, and probably the very first of those neighbors that we're called to serve are our fellow Christians in the congregation. So whether it's making a meal for someone or partaking in one of the other ministries of the church or just showing up on Sunday so that we can sing and participate in the liturgy when perhaps the person next to us is having a hard time doing it that day, our fellow Christians need us there to do that.
I'm wondering, much of what you've said here has to do with what we need, what the individual needs, and as you just said, what your fellow Christians need as well. This is an age, you well know, Cheryl, where the church has bought into a lot of marketing gimmicks and go out and essentially trying to meet the felt needs of people in order to market itself. You're talking about something entirely different, not just felt needs, but genuine spiritual needs.
Yes, that's a great point. It's a good example of the challenge of definitions these days, and definitions like needs or words like needs, words like family can mean so many different things to different people. And so this is definitely referring not to what we feel we need, not the need to feel good about ourselves, not the need to even feel happy, but the need to have our most basic problem met, which is the problem of sin. And the place that that problem is addressed and met is with the forgiveness of sins, and that forgiveness is given to us by our pastor in the stead of Jesus when we go to church.
I'm thinking about that person who came on Easter Sunday. They were a little nervous to go because they know they're going to stick out. They know that they're going to be noticed. If not, they're not going to be pointed out, hopefully, but they're going to be noticed as kind of, oh, there you are, or I don't know who you are. Are you a member here, kind of a thing. And then there is, Cheryl, and I want you to address this, that kind of self-imposed guilt that they feel like, you know, it's been so long, and I might as well, if I start now, I'm just going to feel guilty for having not gone all this time. How would you address that?
Well, I think I would go back to the point that we made in the beginning, which is that if you are in church, it's not because you made the decision to be there. So you shouldn't really look at your presence in church as any sort of reflection upon yourself, as either anything that makes you guilty because you weren't there last week, or as something that you sort of pat yourself on the back and feel very proud of because, hey, I got up and went to church today. But you are there because God wanted you there and called you there. And so rest in that comfort and rest in that knowledge and let the rest of it go.
Finally, kind of on a more maybe pastoral serious note, I've often said that the reason I go to church is essentially that you have pointed out. I need to, but I put it this way. Going to church is the only thing that keeps me a Christian. I do not have the ability, apart from Christ, through his appointed means, word and sacrament, to maintain my faith for a second. If I want to remain a Christian, that's why I go to church. What are your thoughts?
That's a great point. I think the wonderful thing about church and the reason that I would just stay there all the time if I could is because when I'm in church, everything is taken care of. You know, there's the liturgy, there's the order of the service, there's everybody there, my fellow Christians, knowing why they're there, knowing what to do, it's just the ultimate kind of comfort and rest. And without that comfort and without that rest, I don't know how I would go out to face another day.
Cheryl Magnus is a writer, musician, and homeschool mom in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. She's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Five Reasons You Should Go Back to Church Again If You Visited This Easter. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Cheryl, thank you.
Thank you, Pastor.
When we come back, Terry Mattingly will join us. We'll talk about media coverage of the resurrection. As he's perused the Easter journalism, what stands out to him? We'll get the answer to that question right after this.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things, the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us, broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
For more information on the Deaconess Studies program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit ctsfw.edu or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155.
Sacramental, historical, liturgical. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
When a Christian woman is critical of her own flesh, she holds her Creator in contempt.
Rose Adel from her new book, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Our Heavenly Father knit us together in the womb. He did not do a bad job. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. Psalm 139:14. That goes for everyone, including the one who thinks she's the ugliest of them all.
You can purchase and download Concordia Publishing House's new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically, at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes.